Now, Chairman, I'd like to speak in favour of Julian's re-election. I think Julian is probably the only director of an ASX 100 company who is on the board without having been invited onto the board by the board. In other words, Julian ran as a hostile candidate to particularly some elements of the board back in 2005 and became the first outside candidate ever to be successfully elected to a board when the board was saying vote against. Now, clearly the fact that the old four trustees were suing the shareholders for $100 million was a small factor that aroused the anger of the shareholders to the point where they were prepared to support Julian. And I think if you look back on that episode, it was a very appropriate thing that he did. It was outrageous that the old trustees were suing us for $100 million. He did step up and run the governance argument. He made a reference to standing up for shareholder rights, and clearly that's what he did. That's one of the reasons why the shareholders supported him, and we should support him again today. I would be interested in hearing from Julian on how the dynamics of the board has worked, given that he wasn't welcomed on initially. So it's an unusual situation. So how has it turned out? And also, he only owns 75,000 shares. I understood his family was a major beneficiary. So why is it he doesn't have a bigger stake in the company? And what proportion of the company do we know is still owned by the trustees? The original beneficiaries, I should say. I mean, he mentioned it was 90% at the time he was representing them. What's it down to now? Why isn't his stake any higher, and how is the whole board dynamic working? Thanks.
Thank you for those questions. Some of the personal investment side of the questions I'll leave optional to Julian, whether you want to address your personal investment strategy or not. However, I will say that Julian's election actually took place without a vote, as I recall, because if I'm right, the incumbent former trustee directors withdrew at the last minute and you were elected unopposed. But rather than me speak, because I was not chairman at the time, I was one of the directors, and you and I had quite a few conversations prior to that time, which I wouldn't characterise as anything but friendly, but why don't you comment on the governance aspects of the board as you see them?
Thanks, Harry, and thank you, Stephen, for the question. It's a fair question. In short summary, the nature of my experience on the board and the nature of the board overall is we're a very effective and cordial group. That's not a political answer, that's just a statement of fact. So we get on professionally and we get on personally. So the relations amongst the board members as you see them up here are very, very good. That's my view. Again, as a matter of fact, as in since the shareholders effectively initiated that vote for me coming onto the board, I've effectively had two subsequent re-elections which have gone through in the function of the merger with Unitab and then the recent one. On both occasions, I've had the support of the board to continue. So I think that gives some evidence that there is a majority of opinion around this table that I should continue. So I think that answers the first of the questions. The second is about my personal shareholding. The 75,000 shares you refer are correct. It's a simple matter. I have to buy my shares. I'm both compelled to buy them as a director and I would like to own the stock. So having personally had no shares myself, I acquire them on the market like anyone else does. So that's really a function of available resource. I'd like to have some more. So the question of the broader shareholdings within the families, I don't think that's really directly relevant. It's certainly not practically relevant to me. It's something, Stephen, you and I can talk about outside the meeting, and with anyone, I'm happy to talk about it. There, again, as I said in my overview, at one point I had the proxy effectively of 90% of the shareholders. So I had dealings with people who owned a great deal of the shares in the company. Some of those people were my family or my extended family, and some of those people had a lot of shares at the time, and some of them have less shares now. Some still have the same holding. So I don't have any direct control or carriage of those shares.
Thanks, Julian. And just the final point in relation to how many of the former beneficiaries still hold their shares. Obviously, since the float, there's been the merger with Unitab. We've issued a lot of shares. If you recall, at the float, there were 600 million shares, I believe, issued to former beneficiaries and 100 million new shares on the float. Is that right, Ray?
Yeah.
Which gave a total of 700 million, of which 600 went to the former beneficiaries. Since that time, I think our share base is now about 1.2 billion shares following the merger with Unitab. And those, of course, went to former Unitab shareholders. So the holding of former beneficiaries, A, is their personal investment decision, and B, has been heavily diluted by the additional shares issued during the merger with Unitab. I'm not aware of any... are we aware of any former beneficiaries who are still on the substantial list? I don't think there are some,
but I mean...
is our Chief Financial Officer, Ray Gunston?
There's no registered substantial shareholders in the definition of 5%, but there are some holdings, but they have been significantly diminished with the trading and with the dilution over time.
So I think, you know, the former beneficiaries who are still in the company are doing it out of loyalty and out of their personal investment decisions, and we thank them for staying with us. Are there any further questions on Julian's re-election? I'm taking Stephen Mayne's comments as an endorsement, so that's good.